Okay. I just want to first of all wish everyone a good Erev Shabbos, Parshas Ve'era. It's Thursday night, and we are just a few hours away from another Shabbos beginning, and we are excited for Shabbos to come, as we are every week. So, it was a cold January morning in the winter of 2007 when a man in a baseball cap made his way down to the Washington, D.C. metro station and began to play his violin. Over the next 45 minutes, the man played 6 classical pieces, including compositions from Bach and Schubert. Since it was the heart of rush hour, over 1,000 people, to be precise, 1,097 of them, walked by our friend that morning. And yet, despite the beauty of the music being played, almost no one stopped to listen. Our initial gut reaction would argue, well, great compositions don't guarantee great music, especially when they're being played by a random subway performer on his cheap violin. However, our friend wasn't just some random street performer. This man's name was Joshua Bell. And while that may not ring a bell to most of us, Joshua Bell is a world-famous Juilliard-trained violinist. On a regular basis, Bell's concerts sell out with average tickets costing over $100 apiece. And on that cold winter day, Joshua Bell wasn't playing on just any violin. That morning, he took with him his Stradivarius, a violin so rare, so unique, so exquisite, that it was worth over $3.5 million. And yet, despite all this being true, despite the beauty and the grandeur of the music, musician, and instrument, 1,000 people walked right on by as if he didn't exist. The social pundits cried out, "Alas, it's a sign of the times. It's indicative of something we've long expected and seen coming. Classical music is dead. Their modern man isn't interested in the rigid, antiquated music of decades and centuries past. In a world full of hip-hop, pop, rock, R&B, country, and more, classical music has lost its place. It can't keep up with the catchy, flashy tunes and beats of the other musical genres." Journalist Phyllis Fang keenly observed, "While most people recognize the household names of notable composers such as Beethoven and Mozart, but the extent of their interests seems to halt there. Adolescents and millennials have grown to think of classical music as a thing of the past, outdated. They roll their eyes when the grandparents or parents listen to it on the radio, and they wrinkle their noses in astonishment when someone their own age actually enjoys Haydn. As a matter of fact, in 2012, the National Endowment for the Arts reported that only 8.8% of Americans had attended a classical performance in the past 12 months. And while 1937, the median age of a classical music concert attendee in Los Angeles was 28, by 2009, the average age had nearly doubled to 50. Due to those realities, over the past score of years, there have been a wave of orchestras across the country that have filed for bankruptcy, as they're unable to fill their seats. And by 2005, the orchestras that remained behind made more money from donations than from ticket sales. And classical music's decline wasn't only in the venues and concerts, it extended to record sales and the airwaves as well. In 2013, only 2.8% of all albums sold in the US were of the classical genre. Compare that to rock and roll at 35% and R&B at 18%. And last but not least, commercial classical music stations are a thing of the past. Even in major cities across America, such as our very own Chicago, almost all of them have switched over to a public format, relying on donations to stay afloat. The issue, the reason why no one paid attention to Joshua Bell, must have been the choice of music. He picked the wrong career in the wrong decade. No doubt if it was Paul McCartney or Bon Jovi performing, even disguised, everyone would have stopped and noticed. However, upon closer analysis of both this event and historical precedents, it becomes clear that that would have been an overly presumptive and erroneous conclusion to draw. But in order to understand what was going on that winter morning, we have to travel back to May 27th, 1930, in our own toddling town of Chicago. It was a sunny yet windy spring afternoon when Jacques Gordin, the concertmaster of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, a man long forgotten in the annals of history to all but a few, brought his, at the time, $40,000 Stradivarius violin and set up shop right in front of the Art Institute on Michigan Boulevard. Disguised in inconspicuous clothing, he began to play some of the most famous classical pieces, including Schubert's Ave Maria for the passersby. And there he stood for the next 30 minutes, playing right in broad daylight in the middle of lunch hour when the streets were full of people, in an era in the city when just a few hours later, hundreds would gather and pay thousands of dollars to listen to the exact same music. And yet, despite all that, he wasn't able to attract more than a small crowd. Most people barely listened to a song before moving on, not knowing or realizing what they were missing out on. Almost the exact same story as the one that took place nearly eight decades later. However, unlike the year 2007, in the first half of the 20th century, classical music was royalty in American entertainment. Classical musicians were celebrities on the same degree as sports athletes. Just one vignette to highlight. In 1943, Leonard Bernstein's conductorial debut for the New York Philharmonic Orchestra at Carnegie Hall was listened to by millions of people across the United States on CBS National Radio. And the concert and Bernstein's performance made the headlines on the front page of the New York Times the next day in a world that was in the middle of World War II. 1943. And so, even in a world that deeply appreciated and adored classical music, a world-class musician on a world-class instrument playing world-class music was largely ignored. Why? What were these musicians doing wrong? What was going on here? Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, had just faced utter rejection from Paro. "I will not let your people go." And he then proceeded to kick Moshe out of the palace. So there we have Moshe. He makes his way back to Bnei Israel to reiterate the promise of freedom, perhaps not only to encourage them that freedom's front door was still nearby, but also to reaffirm the confidence he needed for himself that he was going to be successful in his mission of freedom for the people of Israel. "Gather round, my fellow people. We will go free. God will save us. He will redeem us from this wretched slavery and bring us to the land of our forefathers." And there was Moshe standing there, expecting a standing ovation, a round of applause, and all he got back were blank stares. As if he didn't exist. They completely ignored him. Okay, maybe an applause is too much, but at the very least, they should have given him a thank you, a shkoyach, a pat on the back, something, some acknowledgement. But instead, they just looked right through him, not paying any attention to him at all. And Moshe? Moshe, he was in disbelief. "Granted, Paro ignored me, but them? The Jews, they should listen. Here I am trying to give encouragement, trying to provide a glimmer of hope that the people can hold on to. And yet my message has fallen on deaf ears. I might as well have been talking to the wind." Now we all know firsthand that Jews can be stubborn and difficult. But this is a little unusual even for them. Moshe was literally relaying God's promise of freedom directly to them, and yet they completely ignored it. Wasn't this what they were waiting to hear? A message of freedom, of divine salvation, of destiny? Isn't that what they needed to hear? Throughout history, we have seen that when people give up hope, with it, they lose the strength to go on. the courage to live. And here was Moshe shining his flashlight, showing everyone the light at the end of the tunnel. And yet, nothing. No response, no engagement, and certainly no shkoyach. Why? What's going on over here? Why didn't they listen? Why didn't they acknowledge him? Why weren't they excited? After taking note of the similarity between the two violent incidents separated by almost 80 years, sociologists and psychologists realized that the issue, the reason why people didn't pay any attention to Joshua Bell in 2007 or Jacques Gordon in 1930, was the same reason why B'nai Yisrael paid no attention to Moshe in Egypt 3,000 years earlier. And it requires us to read four more words in the Pasuk. The reason why they didn't listen wasn't because they didn't want to hear it, because they didn't believe in Moshe. Rather, the Torah says, "V'lo shamu al Moshe mikotzer ruach u'me'avodah kasha." They didn't listen to Moshe because they were so overworked, so wiped out from their slavery, they didn't have the energy, attention, or headspace to listen to, comprehend, or internalize any messages of freedom or hope. They were just too busy to realize what Moshe was saying. And when we are busy, when we don't have freedom in our time, then we lose the freedom, the ability in our minds to pay attention and internalize what's going on in the world around us. We miss out on appreciating the depth and exquisite beauty of the world that God has created. When we were constantly in a rush and distracted, running from place to place, when all that matters are the destinations and the journey becomes nothing more than a chore and a bother, then everything along the way just becomes irritating background noise. The world around us becomes a blur of faces and sounds as we make our way from one place to the next, constantly moving, always running, continuously in a hurry. So much so that we can even completely miss out and fail to register or realize that an incredibly beautiful piece of music is being played right in front of us. We become blind and deaf. It isn't every day, and it's probably not most days, that a world-class violinist busks on a street corner or subway. Seemingly it only happens once every 77 years. But how much else might we be missing out on? How much beauty and grandeur in our lives do we fail to perceive? We were always so busy, always so distracted. From the facial expressions on our loved ones' faces to the rich array of sounds, smells, shades, and colors on the godly canvas that we call nature, if we go too fast, we miss it all. B'nai Yisrael couldn't hear God's words coming from the mouth of the greatest prophet to ever live because they were too busy, too distracted. Is it possible that we are missing out on God's words in our lives, on seeing God's messages, because we are too busy, too distracted, too preoccupied to absorb anything, to take anything in? How much are we missing out on seeing, on experiencing? Life isn't supposed to be one long rat race to the grave. The Torah, God, Judaism, and this week's Parsha challenges us, implores of us to slow down, to take a deep breath and look around, to pull our faces away from our phones so we can once again see, to take the headphones out of our ears so we can once again hear. There is so much to appreciate in the world around us, the people around us, and the godliness around us. I want to end with a three-part blessing. Firstly, that this Shabbos take the opportunity to enjoy the beauty of the world around us, of nature, whether we go out for a walk outside or just have a chance to look out the window, but to appreciate the beautiful tapestry in front of our eyes. Secondly, to look at and actually appreciate our loved ones that we talk to. And thirdly, to use our experiences of the world around us and to look inside ourselves, to be able to hear, to listen, to the ever undying voice that God speaks each and every one of us every single day. I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos.